Hey y'all, Scott here. Some stock market investors are making money hand over fist, while others sit on the sidelines afraid of the dangers. Are you looking for answers? Before you invest $1, I'd like you to take the time to watch this new video from Martin Weiss at moneyandmarkets.com. The video names the 7 riskiest and 4 safest major stocks in America. Learn from the experts and invest wisely. Go to crisis16.com. That's crisis16.com. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. Well, let me tell you about Greg Mitchell, all right? Greg Mitchell, he used to be the editor of Editor and Publisher, and right now he writes for The Nation magazine, and he keeps a blog at gregmitchellwriter.blogspot.com. It's called Pressing Issues. Lots of great stuff there. But then, here's the real deal, is he's written a ton of books, including The Age of WikiLeaks, Dead Reckoning Executions in America, The Campaign of the Century, let's see here, Hiroshima in America, So Wrong for So Long, Atomic Cover-Up, and wait, there's one more, Hollywood Bomb, The Unmaking of the Most Important Movie Ever Made, and yeah, it goes on like that, but especially I wanted to make sure and emphasize the ones discussing nuclear weapons, the use, American use of nuclear weapons at the end of World War II. And then, so now he's got this series here at whowhatwhy.com. Well, I want to know where and when, too. But anyway, whowhatwhy.com. It starts with how bombing Hiroshima got a Hollywood makeover, although that's kind of separate. Then there's a 3-part series about the hiding of the documentary films. All 4 articles here at Who, What, Why are really great and worth your time. I hope you'll go look at them. They're not too long either or anything. You can go check them out and like them. Welcome back to the show, Greg. How are you doing?
Always happy to be here. Thank you.
Well, good. I'm very happy to have you here, and I really appreciate your attention to this subject because it'll never not be important. So, first of all, let's talk about how bombing Hiroshima got a Hollywood makeover because, as you kind of imply in some of the other ones, this is a big part of... you know, how history unfolded after the war.
Right.
Starting with the revision halfway through the making of this MGM film, The Beginning or The End.
Right. Yeah, it came out of the idea from the atomic scientists who turned against the bomb after it was used on civilians in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And MGM bought it and was in the early stages of the scripts was planning to make what might be called an anti-bomb epic. It kind of showed the Hiroshima bombing in a bad light and gave warnings about the development of bigger and better bombs. But halfway through, sort of the Pentagon got to them, and then the Truman White House got to them, revised the script, pictured Truman himself, able to get the actor playing him fired, was unhappy with even the actor, let alone the script. And so the movie ended up as kind of a goofy, tribute to the bomb, melodrama, and what was seen to be, and it was really the first and only epic about the bomb coming from MGM, could have had a big impact. And as you mentioned, I told the full story in my book, Hollywood Bomb, mm-hmm. but it was also the first part of, you'll find it at the Who, What, Why, sort of a separate article from the 3-part series that you mentioned.
Well, I'm going to go to the Pirate Bay right now and see if I can get it, because it was released, right?
Yeah, it's shown on via Turner Classics at times. I'm not sure if it's on DVD, but it shows up on TV from time to time. It was a Hollywood drama. It's not a documentary. So it didn't do well at the box office, which I guess was probably a good thing.
Right. Yeah, I was actually happy when I saw... 1947. Here it is. It's got no seeds. there's one torrent file, but it's got no seeds. Anyway, well,
okay.
Let's see if we can find it somewhere online. Let's talk about some of the revisions then. You say they started out and was it just the script or they had already begun shooting and they were sent back to go and take out everything realistic?
Yeah. They had the script circulated. There was even Ayn Rand had worked on a script for another studio, and then they didn't want to have two movies going, so they kind of incorporated some of her stuff. That's all in my book as well. And they, you know, it was a combination of editing the script, and then even after it was shot, they had a screening in Washington for the White House and other officials just before its release, and even as late as just, you know, a couple months before it was to be released, you know, the White House and other people saw this and were just objected to the way it portrayed Truman sort of making his decision to use the bomb, and they wanted it to underline all the, you know, all the reasons we've heard since about saving American lives, and we had no choice, and Japanese were never going to surrender, and it, you know, it saved a million American lives, and so forth. So they were rewriting right up to the end, and like I said, they got the actor playing Truman fired. They didn't like his attitude, so they got another actor in who portrayed Truman in a more godlike way.
That was funny. Yeah, you said, I love the way you write in here, the actor wrote some kind of smart aleck message back to the White House and said, well, hey, posterity's not going to be kinder to you than me, so you might as well suck it up there, Mr. Commander-in-Chief. I like that.
Yeah, it was sort of a classic to write that to Truman. And Truman didn't really get it. Truman thought it was the guy was writing a nice note to him and everything. He didn't get the sarcasm in it.
Yeah, well, anyway, we won't go too far off about Harry Truman, or we'll have to talk about the Ku Klux Klan and all of that. But anyway, so, you know, I think it's really important the way you talk about in here. You go down the list of the suppression of facts and the fabrications, the things that were added, especially things like the B-29s were pelted with heavy flak and made their act of nuking this peaceful, demilitarized city full of women and children into some heroic act of self-defense. And it just goes to show, really, when you go through this list here all together the way you do in kind of bullet point format, just how guilty their conscience was, or at least, how afraid they were of some level of accountability if people really knew the truth about what it was that they had done.
Well, I've always felt, two things. I've written about this for over 30 years now, and what's always driven me are two things. One, if we had nothing to be ashamed about, if this was such a slam dunk and right decision, you know, why has the government gone and the media gone to such an extent for decades to kind of cover up the full story? So that's number one. Number two is that, we still have first strike weapons. And, you know, some people like to say, never again, and whatever happened the first time, we'll never use them again. We should never use them again. But that's undercut by the fact that we continually defend the use of them the first time, and we still have first strike weapons. So if you can defend the use against Japan, which was somewhat unique, at least up to that period, situation, if you can continue to defend that, and also Nagasaki, which was even worse, surely you can defend using it today. There's that precedent. So those are the two things that have driven me. You know, you mentioned I did write a book with Robert J. Lifton, Hiroshima and America, and then more on the subject of these films, I wrote a book called Atomic Cover-Up, which really tackles the story you just mentioned, plus the documentary films that I wrote about again this week. But Atomic Cover-Up is really about that film footage.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, I think it was you probably that pointed me toward George Weller and his work, first into Nagasaki, and mm-hmm. I interviewed his son all about it and all that kind of thing. And that's just another part of the story of the lengths that they went to suppress this information. And, you know, it's funny.
I was a kid
in the Reagan years, after detente and when it was brinksmanship again, kind of Cold War years, and the hippies put The Day After on TV. I mean, I saw that when I was in, I don't know, what, third, fourth grade, something like that. So I think I kind of grew up with a whole different idea about what a nuclear war might look like than the Americans who had come before me, who really didn't have much of a picture of Hiroshima other than a real faraway shot of a mushroom cloud. And that was about all they knew of it.
Right. Well, that's the story of the documentary footage is really how these the American military elite film crew, went into Hiroshima and Nagasaki after the bombings and shot in color film, which was very unusual at the time. Sort of the stark effects on people you know, we had seen the black and white photos of the A-bomb dome and, you know, the rubble and all that kind of stuff, but we hadn't seen really even black and white photos. And here these guys have had color footage of the effects on people, the people dying of radiation disease, the terrible burns, so on and so forth. And the fact that when you look carefully, you said, gee, 9 out of 10 of these people are women and children, which we also wanted to obscure. We wanted people to think we bombed, you know, military base or, you know, they're at least men in factories, you know, as opposed to women and children. So that footage was, of course, quite stark. And really, the story I tell is how that footage was suppressed for literally for decades and really only, you know, came out, you know, started coming out about 20 years ago. And, you know, why it was suppressed and how it was suppressed. And also footage shot by Japanese newsreel team was confiscated by the U.S. and that was suppressed for decades.
Right. Now, when we come back, I want to give you a chance to really talk about the stories of the suppression of those films and what's in them and all that. But I can't help but make sure before we go out to this break to point out, as I don't know why I'm not smart enough, Greg, to think of this myself. For whatever reason, I had to plagiarize this from the great historian Ralph Rako. But Ralph Rako said, you know what, let's go ahead and give them their numbers. Oh, yeah, 500,000 American soldiers would have died if they'd had to invade Japan or whatever. Well, never even mind. Just take it for granted the condition of unconditional surrender. And just take for granted their numbers of how many soldiers, GIs, would have died in trying to invade Japan. Are you saying that if they had somehow been able to just send a force in to round up the women and children, the men, women, and children of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and just machine gun them all in the town square like the German Gestapo, that in order to end the war, that that would have been okay? Because that wasn't American rules of engagement in Europe whatsoever. Is that what would be all right? Would be to round them all up and machine gun them all to death? Or for some reason it's okay if you blast them all to kingdom come in a moment with some fission? Somehow that's like painless or more justifiable or allowable. But of course, when you put it that way, then the answer has to be absolutely not, that Truman was as bad as a Nazi to do what he did.
Yeah, well, briefly, I know you want to go to a break, is one of the real turning points for me in this whole subject was when I went to Hiroshima in 1984, and the first day I was there, I was taken up to a hill to overlook.
All right, hold it right there, everybody. It's the great Greg Mitchell, and we're talking about his series at whowhatwhy.com about the nuking of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. We'll be right back after this. Oh, follow him on Twitter, Greg Mitch. Hey, y'all, Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first and just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way, the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. I'm talking with Greg Mitchell. He wrote this 3-part series, plus one about a movie, too. A Hollywood movie. They're all about the suppression of the film evidence of the American nuclear attacks on Hiroshima and Nagasaki in August of 1945. And I'm sorry about that break there, Greg. You were saying what...
Okay, well, just quickly, on my first day in Hiroshima, I was taken up on this hill to look out over the city, the modern city, get a little sense of geography there, and you saw this enormous city as it was in 1945 in this dome, it was surrounded by hills on three sides, and it was very easy to then look out and imagine this new weapon being detonated right in the center above that city. In this, like the top of a dome, and with the hills around it, and even before the attack, one of the reasons for attacking Hiroshima was that these hills would create a focusing effect, as they put it, which would direct the power of the bomb back on the city for greater extermination. And you know, it was just easy that image of looking out and saying someone deliberately set off a weapon deliberately at the center of this, over the center of the city, to kill everyone within this, from one hill to another, you know, deliberately. And so that kind of is an image you kind of sticks with you, and that partly inspired the work I've done since then.
Yeah, well, Truman himself was asked at one point years later, well, why didn't you nuke three cities or something? Because it took him one extra day to surrender, I guess. And he said, well, you know, we considered it, but the thought of all those women and babies. So at the end of the day, he really was willing to admit that, yeah, he had murdered hundreds of thousands of women and babies. And it was, but, you know, a few hundred thousand more of them, why, that was just too much, you know?
Well, that was, you know, the footage that we talked about that was suppressed afterwards. This was, I mean, I talked to both the director of that, the U.S. military project, and sort of his chief staffer on it. I talked, interviewed both of them, and they, you know, they both said that basically, contrary to what many people are told, a lot of the people in the running the U.S. military, running the top officials in the U.S. did feel guilty about it, did realize perhaps in retrospect that this possibly could have been avoided, and so they wanted to hide this, and they wanted to hide the fact that we wanted to build a bigger bomb, which we did, with the hydrogen bomb. We wanted to test these weapons in the Pacific and then in the U.S. And of course, growing up in the 50s and 60s, I was subjected to fallout like everyone else. So they had to kind of sell the bomb. They had to sell bigger and better bombs. They had to sell the testing of the bomb. They had to sell the getting an arsenal in the tens of thousands for, you know, to going forward. So there was a lot of reasons to try to make Hiroshima and Nagasaki go away, or at least seem like a cut and dried slam dunk kind of decision. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you talk about, and it's believable to me, certainly because of the lack of contrary information coming out, that even though so few people saw that original Hollywood movie about it, that more or less became the official history anyway. All the tropes about just how desperate and necessary it was and all of that. There really was no competing information out there, right? Like, I don't know, maybe if you asked a commie or something, an actual pro-Soviet or something. Other than that, there was no contrary information for anybody to really complain about.
Well, that's right. I mean, in my atomic cover-up book, I talk about how it wasn't just films. They also suppressed photographs. Even in Japan, they didn't have access to photographs about what happened to them until the late 1970s. They, you know, started a nationwide movement to raise money to buy photos and some of this film footage from the National Archives in the U.S., and they published big books and so forth. But until the late 1970s, the Japanese themselves had very little photographic record of what had happened, because the photos and the negatives and the film footage were all seized by the U.S. and disappeared.
All right. Now, I guess now only some of this has been released, but never just the reels of all the raw footage of the color and the black and white, right? Just little pieces.
Well,
here
they're now declassified. They're in the National Archives in Maryland. People have had access. Really, the filmmakers didn't really know about it till when I was editor of Nuclear Times in the early 1980s. The first feature I assigned was on this subject, and then filmmakers started flooding the National Archives with requests. Really, was not hardly anyone knew this footage existed until then. And so, over the years, bits and pieces, small amounts of footage. I've even worked on a film that used some of the footage, but there's never been a full documentary on the story. I'd be happy to participate if anyone wants to do that. There's never been a full documentary on kind of the story behind the story of this footage. There's never been a full documentary airing, you know, large parts of the footage. So that's still yet to be done. But you know, small bits of this color footage have shown up in different films, and you know, maybe even some of the listeners have seen it. Any color footage of the aftermath of the atomic bomb or the victims has to have come from this footage. Mm-hmm. It was the only record of it, and it was the only thing in color.
And now, is this the one that was hidden in the ceiling?
Well, that was the Japanese newsreel teams had shot, shot footage even before the Americans got there. And
so that was the black and white footage that ended up becoming the movie Hiroshima and Nagasaki 1945.
Right, and they were forced to turn over.
I have trouble keeping track of which footage is which.
Right, they were forced to turn over the footage, but they made a copy and kept the copy or part of it, I guess a small part of it, in a ceiling. And then years later, they dug that out and were able to look at some of that, but that was just a small part of what they had.
And can you tell us the story of this guy Sussan, Herbert Sussan?
Yeah, he was sort of the person who got me involved in this, again, over 30 years ago. He, you know, he was one of the chief people on the U.S. military team. He came back from the war, became a pioneering producer and director at CBS in the early, early days of television. And he was haunted by what he'd seen. And he wanted to get this footage out. And he approached everyone from Bob Truman himself to Bobby Kennedy to Edward R. Murrow to try to get this footage shown on TV or made into movies or whatever. And he couldn't, they wouldn't even help him find it. You know, it was a great mystery what had happened to it. And so he tried for decades. And then he's the one who happened to run into the Japanese activist at the UN in the late 1970s at an exhibit of some of the stills from the film. And he said, you know what, I shot that some of that footage. And so the Japanese then discovered, oh, there's this film exists out here. And he led them then to the film at the National Archives, and sort of the rest is history. But he was sort of the key person. He then died a few years later from lymphoma, which some people have connected to exposure to radiation in the atomic cities.
Oh man! So now on the this series again, it's a 3-part series at Who, What, Why by Greg Mitchell here, and you have some of the color footage, and I think you have also YouTube of. Oh no, it's just a bit. I'm sorry, I thought it was the whole thing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki 1945. Do you know where people can find? At least, you know, the best versions, longest versions of all these online anywhere?
Well, you know, if you go to, I mean, first of all, there I have a trailer for my book. If you just put in atomic cover-up at YouTube, this mm-hmm. will come up as the first thing. It's been quite popular. It shows some of the color footage. So in a, you know, 2 or 3 minutes, you'll get to see what we're talking about here. So if you just search atomic cover-up at YouTube, you will find that. If you put in Hiroshima color footage at YouTube, you'll find at least one and possibly more 8 or 9 minute excerpts from the original footage. So you get to see it at kind of at length. It's a very small part of it. If you put in Hiroshima Nagasaki 1945, you can find the full version of the 15-minute film that was eventually made by Eric Barnow around 1970 from the Japanese footage. So there are ways to see parts of this. You know, YouTube is your friend. So that's what I'd recommend. The Who, What, Why series has some has a couple videos in embedded in that with the stories also. There's even on YouTube, just quickly, there's one of the things that internally the Pentagon did was they made a couple what they called training films. They took some of the footage, black and white footage, and made these training films to show to soldiers who were going to march under the mushroom cloud and, you know, in our tests in Nevada. So it wasn't to warn people about radiation or the bomb. It was to prepare our soldiers for going to war with the bomb. So you can find at least one of them on YouTube, but they were not released to the public. Those were strictly for the military.
Yeah, I saw one where they're standing right under air-to-air nuclear missile that was to be used against Russian bombers, and they're standing right under it, bragging about how great it is. Anyway, I'm sorry we're all out of time. Thanks so much, Greg Mitchell, whowhatwhy.com, everybody, and the nation.
Thank
Greg.
Bye.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here. Are you a libertarian and or peacenik? Live in North America? If you want, you can hire me to come and give a speech to your group. I'm good on the terror, war, and intervention, civil liberty stuff, blaming Woodrow Wilson for everything bad in the world, Iran, central banking, political realignment, and, well, you know, everything. I can teach markets to liberals and peace to the right. Just watch me. Check out scotthorton.org/speeches for some examples and email me, scott@scotthorton.org, for more information. See you there. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager who provides his subscribers with a very real window into his investments, updating them on every move he makes in the markets. Right now, Mike's anticipating a bear and is dumping all the stocks while the getting is good, investing instead in gold and the commodities. Protect your assets and learn the wise ways of the markets. WallStreetWindow.com. And check out Mike Swanson's great contribution to the history of the rise of the American Empire and the War State. Available at scotthorton.org/Amazon. Man, you need some new stickers for the back of your truck. Scott Horton here for LibertyStickers.com. Aren't you sick and tired of everyone else being wrong about everything all the time? Well, now you can tell them all what's right with some stickers from LibertyStickers.com. At LibertyStickers.com, they're against everything, so you know they're good on your issue, too. Whether it's the wars, police state, gun laws, the left and right, or the president, LibertyStickers.com has hundreds of choices so you can find just the right words to express your opposition and contempt for those who would violate your rights. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.